are live. Joel Yurasimos, I am honored to be the first, your first interview with each other in person. You're just now meeting for the first time, right?
That's true, man.
We met 3 days ago for the first time ever after nearly 2.5 years of working together and pretty much talking together over a computer every single day.
How many episodes?
119.
119 episodes, my goodness.
119 episodes, 5 runs. We're in the middle of a 5th round of our coaching program, and everything else we've been doing, man, we've just been doing online until today.
Ishan said cute couple in the chat. Yeah, I agree.
Ishan's a legend.
Yeah, he's great.
I might be meeting Ishan for the first time in person, too, when I go out to Jersey, so looking forward to that.
Awesome. Okay, I want to talk first your like origin story of how you guys got together, because that's a pretty cool story, especially because your podcast is so rad and your coaching program together and things like that. And then I want to get into some deep topics, some things that I've like been wrestling with, and get your perspective, and we'll just have a conversation. So if you could just start like sharing how you guys connected and how you established Here for the Truth and all the things.
Yeah, bro. In 2021, I was driving to work at a family business in construction, and I was listening to an episode of the Unslaved podcast hosted by Michael Tessarian and David Whitehead. And the podcast I was listening to, the two guests happened to be Yurasimos and his wife, Sophie Fletcher. And they were talking about awakening somatic intelligence and talking about the body as the shadow, the body as the unconscious. And that podcast, I got a lot of value out of it. It really moved me. So I decided to try find Yurasimos on Instagram, and I messaged him in 2021. Then we had a bit of a dialogue, a few back and forths. We realized we're obviously on the same page. We shared a lot of values. And the second time we ever spoke over Zoom, we were like, let's just record episode 1 of a podcast right now. And we spoke about walking our authentic path and what that means. And every single week since then, we've been recording episodes.
That's nuts. And you're just now meeting for the first time in person. That's what's so cool about this. Like, that's one of the cool things about technology. And like, I shit on technology quite a bit because we're just so overly addicted to it. But you two would have never connected if it weren't for technology.
This is the thing, man. We would have never connected.
Yeah, you and I. All three of us would have never connected.
You know, you and I connected through a Telegram group. You know, yeah. Three of us wouldn't be here right now. And so I think it's really important to like look at technology as a tool and how can you use it to benefit your life and benefit your mission. That being said, yeah, there are elements of it that aren't ideal. So, you know, again, it's up to the individual to determine how they utilize technology for the benefit of their life.
But this is the thing, Alec. Nothing in life is black and white. And the majority of people want to make everything black and white, but it's simply not. We're living conscious beings. We have to think extensively about everything. And the palette is extensive. It's not 2 colors, not 2 shades.
Well, okay, that brings up like one of the first things I wanted to touch on. So I've been thinking about this a lot, and I've wrestled with so many conflicting ideas on like what it is, if it is a thing. Is there such thing as objective truth? And I'll open it up with that question first. Like are some things fundamentally black and white? Is there objective truth? And let's go from there, because I have like 10 follow-up questions to that.
Sure, man. I mean, Ayn Rand would say A equals A. Reality is a fact. This microphone exists. This keyboard exists, right?
Yeah.
Reality is objectivity. Nature is objectivity.
Is that it? is that the answer? I mean, that's
objective truth exists. Anyone who wants to debate that, who wants to distort that, to me, they're choosing to live in illusion. They're choosing to live in contradiction. They're choosing to try distort reality to fit their own distorted inner chaos and inner contradictions.
I completely agree with that, actually. Yeah. The thing that I wrestle with, though, with respect to objective truth is like, first off, there's a lot of people who will claim, like, obviously an inanimate object or just something physical that's actually in front of you, that's an easy one. It's like, okay, we're objectively, like, the objective truth in this situation is you're sitting together and I'm talking to you guys. Like, that's objectively true, right? Yep. But when it comes to, like, things we haven't, how do I put this? Virology is like the easy example on this. Like, do viruses objectively not exist, or do they objectively exist? Because like, there's an argument there that people would say there is objective proof that viruses exist, and others would say there is no objective proof that viruses exist. And I guess like, what I'm getting at is, when it comes to more complex things that aren't as black and white as obvious. Is there an objective truth about every aspect of reality, or is something just objective? You know what I'm asking? I'm probably like wording that in a weird way.
Well, some things aren't known yet.
Yeah.
You know, like there was a time hundreds of years ago when many of things which we would consider to be objective facts today were still not in the forefront of the collective consciousness. They weren't they weren't brought into light yet. So, I mean, with virology, it's very difficult to say whether there's clear objectivity there right now. But I think we're in the fray of really hashing that out and discovering that answer now in this current period of time. But, you know, to say no objectivity exists, you know, to me is a falsity. There's clearly objectivity, but there's some things which are still coming into the light of consciousness, which is a process which we're all involved in right now.
What about natural law? What do you think about natural law? Is there such thing as natural law?
I mean, I think there's definitely natural law.
Okay, I'll pose it this way.
Okay.
A lot of vegans that I know will claim that because of natural law, it's wrong to kill another animal for consumption or another being for consumption. Like, what would you respond to that with respect to natural law?
Listen, I'm not an expert in natural law. We had Will Keller on the podcast talking about it in our membership community, and that subject came up. I don't know, man. I mean, again, at the end of the day, a person's going to make a decision for themselves. But in terms of eating meat or not eating meat and how that relates to natural law.
If I can divulge here a little bit, if you're not talking about natural law, if you look at all of nature, the intention of every single living organism is geared towards its own survival. So the lion is not going to think twice about killing to eat for its own survival, because its survival is the highest value to it.
Yeah.
The plant isn't going to think twice about digging for more fertile soil or facing towards the sun, for example, right? Yeah. So I guess then the question then becomes, do human beings who are geared towards survival, geared towards thriving, do they require, in the circumstances that we currently live within, in this current experience that we're having, do they require animal nutrients for optimal functioning? I mean, that's really the question.
Good point too, because when I don't want to get off on like a vegan versus carnivore tangent, but it is an important point to bring up. Is like a lot of people will say, well, some will say that okay, you can be fully healthy on a entirely vegan diet, and then you show them countless examples where there's people who were eating vegan and some of them were eating raw, or some of them were vegan for 10 years and then they switched back to animal products and they started feeling healthier. And then a lot of the responses to that will be, well, you know, even if your health, like the vegan principle is, even if your health is suffering a little bit, it is immoral. It is objectively, and that's again, objectively immoral to take the life of another being in order to sustain your own. And My response to that is always like, how is there no consideration for your own life? Like, how is that like not in the question or on the table for consideration?
And also, is death and suffering not part of natural law? Isn't that an objective reality too?
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you're not directly taking the life of an animal, I mean, at least in like the modern times, veganism, how much blood is on the hands of a vegan based on the fact that all these fields need to be, you know, sown for soy or corn or whatever the case may be. You know, the animals that are being, the environments that are being disrupted to grow all these plants that support a vegan diet. Now, again, if you're living at home on your own, growing your own foods, you may have some control over it. But just because you're not directly involved with it doesn't mean that there aren't animals suffering based on your dietary choices.
But what about when someone like that? That's my point, though. Is like, what about when someone says it is objectively immoral? And that's what I'm talking about when it comes to objective truth as it relates to like things like this. Some people say it is objectively immoral to take an animal's life or to take another being's life.
If someone was trying, if three of us were hanging out and someone was trying to kill one of us, I'd cut that motherfucker. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, true. Agree.
So like that's what I'm saying. Like, so in that situation, you know, I want us to survive, so I'm going to take another life. So if you're applying it with the idea that in order to survive, like Joel was saying, at the highest ability, we need animal products, then, you know, we live the way we live as our ancestors have done for thousands and thousands and thousands of years.
Across the earth on in multiple civilizations all exactly. over the place. Yeah. Yeah.
All again, right. This is a debate. This is a dialogue, man. We've had this in so many different variations of it. And this is a conversation that, again, you're dealing with, again, subjective ideas and what a person believes, whether mm-hmm. or not they don't think they have a right to take another animal's life. You know, if you think of native populations, man, they had a reverence. They had a reverence for the animals that yeah. they were, you know, that they were sacrificing to nourish themselves. They were using the entire animal, you know, so I just think it's very simplistic. Well, they don't kill animals.
Dude, this is what I've said before. I think it's like that at the least, both vegans and carnivore, paleo people, keto people, Whole 30 people, frugivores, fruitarians, we can all agree that at the least, it's like factory farming is horrible, right? Yeah. Like the unnecessary slaughtering of animals, like in factory farms. For just overconsumption in Western cultures is objectively, see, that's where I like hesitate to say objectively bad. Cause it's like, okay, is objective morality a thing? Is there objective morality?
I mean, to me, yes, there is objective morality.
Give me some examples of things that are like objectively immoral.
Well, I think it's obviously objectively immoral to I think force is objectively immoral. I think coercion is objectively yeah. immoral. You know, I think the disruption of true individual rights is objectively immoral. Mm. I think if you take it back to a hunter-gatherer situation and say, ultimately property rights is what protects an individual's ability to use reason for his own survival. Mm. So production is the application of reason to the challenge of survival, which we're all faced with. So if you have a hunter who goes and gathers his own food for whatever means it might be, then he has foraged his own food for his own survival, for his own nourishment. If you have someone else who comes along and tries to take that by force, then he is now threatening that individual's potential for survival and for life. And to me, that's objectively immoral.
But see, in this, and I'm pushing back only because these are the arguments that I hear. And I'm not trying to turn this into like a vegan versus non-vegan episode, but it is interesting and it just keeps coming up. So yeah. then how would that apply to taking the life of another being? Because aren't you like forcefully killing them in that, you know what I mean? Like how is it only human?
Okay, so then in that instance, does objective morality only apply to humans? So the lion, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the lion takes another life. It doesn't matter if the bear takes another life.
True.
Right? Are we only trying to guilt ourselves with this unearned guilt?
This is a very good point. And so it's that objective morality, like can only, like we can't.
At the end of the day, this is the thing, man. What these people are trying to, they're trying to bring humans down the ladder. The objective reality is that we are the only species with volitional consciousness,
yeah.
with the capability to think.
True.
That means we have the choice to think or not to think. So what that also means is that we're the only species that can actually act against our own interests. The animal can't mm-hmm. really act against its own interest. Neither can the plants. Their objective morality is their own survival. We're the only ones with the gift of volitional consciousness in that regard. So whether people like it or not, we are at the top of the hierarchy. And what I'm seeing all around me is people trying to tarnish human beings, trying to bring us down, trying to believe that we're born guilty, that we need to suffer, that life is meant to be spent in atonement, that we're meant to be feeling bad about ourselves for everything that's taking place, right? And I'm saying, no, we need to exalt the human being.
Completely agree. And I think... in that situation, it's trying to apply morality to something that they're not concerned with morality. Those beings are not concerned with morality. A cow is not concerned with morality. A deer, an antelope, a rabbit, whatever you're eating, they're not concerned with morality. They're concerned with their own survival.
That is their morality.
Yeah.
That is their code of ethics, which ultimately is what morality is. That's mm-hmm. it. It's like, I'm here. And the objective challenge is my survival. So then, therefore, the highest act of morality is to nourish myself, is to do yeah. everything I can through the act of valuing my own life, through the act of valuing the fact that I exist, which is something that's desperately missing among the masses.
Well, what about the people that say that that's what breeds selfishness, though, right? Where you're only focusing on yourself. And for some people, they will take it to the extreme, and it seems to be focusing on the self to the exclusion and almost exploitation of other people. Like, what would your response be to that?
True selfishness is never the exploitation of another, because the truly rational selfish man knows that through exploiting, forcing, or coercing another, then they are damaging the fundamental principle of freedom, which gives them the inherent right to act in their own interest, to create value for themselves. So the truly selfish individual values freedom over anything. And so the last thing that they would ever want to do is to disrupt the flow of freedom for another individual, because they know that in that act, they're only damaging their own capacity of freedom, their own capacity to value their own life and to act in their own interest. So to me, I'm seeing a huge lack of selfishness. I think selfishness is one of the key words which has been heavily distorted, and something that we actually need to reclaim if we want to move to a more, you know, a greater way of being. Yeah. I think it's the principle of altruism and collectivism, which is the code of ethics of evil. Ultimately, it's the idea that I need to sacrifice myself for everyone else around me. And through that principle, what we have is a whole collective that's acting out of resentment, out of obligation, out of fear, out of guilt, right? Because they think everyone owes them something because they've been sacrificing themselves for everyone else. So I think when individuals can actually reclaim selfishness, which ultimately means to act in one's own self-interest, then we can actually have more freedom. We can have a more peaceful, harmonious society where people actually honor individual rights, because they value their freedom, they value their life, they value their inherent gifts to create value as creative, imaginative beings, to bring things into creation, right? And now we're getting to the principle of capitalism, which is, to me, has caused more growth, more achievement, more well-being for human societies than any other social system in existence.
Erasmus, you got anything to add to that?
This is Joel's wheelhouse, man. He's killing it. So I'm rolling right now. I agree with everything he said.
Cool.
What I want to add, actually, is we just need to reclaim the language, man, because even the term capitalism, you know, to so many people, it means one thing. But on the simplest level, it's just the voluntary exchange of value for value, you know. And so when you're able to know yourself, love yourself, be creative, be productive, create something and receive fruits for your labor, you know, that's the essence of capitalism. Now, again, there's corruption. There's everything else that goes along.
There's corruption because of regulation, though, and that's the issue. Yeah. It's because of regulation.
Which is anti-capitalistic.
Yeah, exactly. That's the whole point. Because people will say that capitalism is the problem. Like, the reason that these multinational corporations are so corrupt is because of capitalism. And I wholeheartedly disagree with that. The reason these multinational corporations are corrupt is because they're able to manipulate the legislation, the laws, codes, acts, and statutes to fit what they want, to be able to, you know, pass something that I would say here I am using this word, objectively harmful substances off as not harmful. So then they are then sold to people who then consume them. And then the agencies who are supposed to track that harm are then corrupt themselves and bought out by that organization. So then they divert attention away from the very clear harm of that. And you could insert anything into here. You could insert the shots. You could insert like certain agricultural products. You can insert literally anything that is captured. And then they'll blame it on, oh, this is happening because of capitalism. It has nothing to do with capitalism. In a true free market, if a company makes a product that you could then have another company that is completely independent that has a track record of validating whether that product is actually safe and actually effective, and that, you know, multiple different independent companies who are charged with validating whether, you know, the contents of any of these products are like their harm or their efficacy or anything like that. And then if that company has a shit product, people can just be like, I'm not fucking buying that product. There's a huge incentive then for that company to produce a good product. Yeah. And that it frustrates the shit out of me when people say that capitalism is a problem. Capitalism is not the problem. It's not capitalism. Capitalism is a good thing. It's in a truly free market. But I don't think, you know, at least in modern times, the world has seen a truly free market.
Brief, maybe, yeah, we got very close briefly in the early stages of the founding of America, but true capitalism is a separation of state and economics, which clearly is not the situation right now. What people confuse capitalism with is bureaucracy. What we have now is bureaucracy. We have corporatism, right? It's not, it's not capitalism.
Plutocracy is another way to describe it, like a government controlled by the rich. So with respect to individualism versus collectivism, though, do you still think like it's a virtuous thing to be concerned with the collective at some level as an individual? With the understanding that we're all interdependent, right? Like Charles Eisenstein talks about.
We're social beings, man. We're social beings at the end of the day. But again, and you know, we had J. Edward Griffin on the podcast, you know, last year, and we had this conversation around collectivism versus individualism. And there's the whole phrase, "the greater good for the greater number." That's something that is important to me. I want the greater good for the greater number. But what is the way to go about doing it?
Yeah.
Is it through honoring the individual, honoring individual rights, or sacrificing the individual for the greater good? And who determines what's right for the greater good but the person that holds the most power or the most influence within the collective? And we see what's happening when we look around us, when we pay attention to what's been happening the last few years as well. And so I just think that's the way to go about doing it, man, is honoring individual first and foremost.
Right. The people who have done more good and wondrous things with the collective are those who have been free to actually create value for themselves. It's free to think, right? With no force, no coercion, no sacrificing for the group or the collective. They're the people who bring about all the innovations which have uplifted human societies, which have uplifted the collective. It's through individuals who have been allowed to be individuals. So the people, when an individual is... when a truly individual is concerned for the collective, then they see there's opportunities to create value for the collective. And through the creation of value for the collective, they create value for themselves as well. You know, it's like all the flourishment that we've ever seen has come from individualism at the end of the day.
I completely agree with that. And someone put in the comments, "I believe there is corruption, whether there is capitalism or not." Yeah, of course. I don't pretend in that the idea of a fully voluntary society would be free of corruption, but I think what I posit is that the most significant, the highest concentration of corruption comes because of regulation and because of government in any respective area. I mean, Joel, like you experienced that firsthand with what you dealt with in Australia. Can you actually share your case that you had in Australia? Because the way you came out on top was so badass.
Yeah, sure. Just quickly on that, I know there's different areas of discussion around this, but to me, I think the only role of government should be to protect the individual from physical force and physical violence. And to me,
I can agree with that. If there is to be a role of government, that's it. That's the only freaking thing. That is it. That is it. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure many people listening know, but Australia during the pandemic era, 2020 to 2022, was, you know, incredibly intense. We had one of the highest rates of lockdowns across the world. In Melbourne, I think they were locked up for like 10 months straight at one point. It was absolutely insane. We dealt with things like having one-hour curfews where I lived in Sydney. And during that 1 hour, when you were allowed out, you were actually only allowed out to exercise, nothing else other than that. And if you were doing anything other than exercising, like all the beaches, all the streets were patrolled, police on horses everywhere. I had multiple knocks on my door.
I have a question on that though. Like, what if someone's like form of exercise was like they were just walking around typing on their phones? They're like, "I'm exercising my thumbs." So, like, what is exercise?
Well, it was very subjective, Ali. It was up to the
police
officer.
There was no objective exercise.
It was up to the police officer's discretion to determine whether that individual was exercising or not. But yeah, I mean, I became obviously highly outspoken. And I received 3 individual fines for breaching the Australian Public Health Order. One was for leaving my house to go to a protest. And at that protest, which was deemed, you know, in breach of the Public Health Order, multiple photos were taken of me. There were 37 individual reports to Crime Stoppers in Australia about my presence.
What the hell? 37?
Yeah, individual
reports. Wait, is that people snitching on you?
Yeah, me.
37 people snitched?
In the brief of evidence that I received from the police, one of the statements was that we received 37 individual reports of Joel Rafiti's presence at the July 2021 Sydney Freedom Rally.
Do you think they made that up, or do you think that's true, that there's many people that are compliant?
I think that's true, because at that time, like, the people who were, like, on the other side of the fence, like, they were fully armed and weaponized by the media to be snitches. And so,
37, though, that's a lot of people, man.
Yeah, bro, it is. The other fine I received was for not wearing a mask in the local shopping center. And the third one was for, during one of those 1 hour curfews, I decided to have a picnic with my family instead of exercising. Wow. So I was eating a cucumber, and apparently that cost me $1,000 as well. So yeah, man, I received those fines, and it was actually a major rite of passage for me, man, because, you know, there was scenarios where I'm like, if I pay this, I'll feel like absolute shit about myself. To me, it's acting against myself. If I pay a lawyer to defend me through this process, then I'm going to feel just as bad about myself, because, like, I obviously shouldn't have even received these fines in the first place.
You wanted to present yourself. I mean, that, like, you, without even, I don't know if you knew about common law principles at that time, but if you didn't, like, you are just naturally conducting them, because it's like, I'm presenting myself. I'm not having someone re-present me.
Yeah, man. So I decided to properly look at my options. I took it as a major rite of passage, and I had multiple discussions. And ultimately, I went and I learned what I need to learn to defend myself via the law. There were many people in Australia who tried to go the common law route, walking into the court. I'm a living man. I'm a sovereign man. This, that. I didn't think that was going to get me anywhere. But I was actually able to fight it on the basis of the law that they actually had written. So on three separate occasions, I went in there and presented my case, and I won every single time.
What did you say? Like, what did you use with respect to the law to defend yourself?
Yeah, well, the basis of the public health order, which they tried to implement in the first place, was illegal. It was completely flawed. For them to actually fine someone, then they had to issue each individual with a public health order that stated their name on it as an individual. And also, it had to be approved by a biomedical officer that this person actually was in breach of it. Like, there was all these terms and conditions attached to the public health order. So it's just about reading the actual legislation at the end of the day. And, you know, credit where credit's due, man. I sat in front of many reasonable magistrates. So obviously, before going in, like, especially hyped within the truth community, you think everyone inside is controlled, you know, everyone's under the same umbrella. But as, you know, from first-hand experience, no, man, I sat in front of reasonable judges who were rationally and reasonably looking at the cases between me and the police officers and making a decision. To quote one of the words of one of the magistrates, like, it's my job here to minimize as much trauma as possible on the defendant being me. So to me, I found that actually quite impressive.
Yeah.
It's a lot of smoke and mirrors, man, because there's a lot of fear to walk into a court, especially when, you know, the maximum sentence is jail, that's possible, et cetera, et cetera. But I think by actually moving through those emotional barriers, those emotional resistances, and going there and doing the work, you know, there's a lot of fruits that come from it. They try to keep people at bay through the illusion of fear. But, you know, for the individual who is willing to do the work, there's opportunity there.
You know, this sounds a lot like you took some self responsibility. So I want to talk about self responsibility. I want to talk about self responsibility a little bit now. Why do you think self responsibility is so important?
Why do I think it's important, man? Because that's how you take ownership of your life. That's how you get out of a victim state of consciousness, and you look at everything as a gift. You know, if something bad happens, then, you know, why did it happen? If I have a goal set in life and I go after it and there's bumps along the way, like, what can I learn from it? You know, self-responsibility just allows you, man, to just, again, like, own yourself. You know, like, what do I need to do to improve as a human being? What do I need to do to be the type of man that I want to be? You know, if you externalize everything, it's disempowering. So self-responsibility ultimately is the most empowering thing that you can do, because you have control. You have control over yourself to the degree that you do. So
I actually think it's like that this whole agenda is trying to shift us away from self-responsibility to give responsibility to someone else, to shift the responsibility for our own health, for our finances, for this, for that, away from the individual, which, like, I'm of the perspective that the biggest barrier to freedom is not whatever the fuck the government's doing. It's not whatever Fauci's doing. It's not what Klaus Schwab's doing. It's not that whole agenda. And I don't, please don't mistake what I'm saying for anyone listening or watching this. Absolutely, those people are preying on us and they're, you know, preying on our poor decisions. But the biggest barrier to freedom in my, you know, from my perspective, is that people are scared of having to be fully responsible for their own lives.
100%, man.
Of course they are, man. Like public health, like what is public health? Has someone ever like just rationally sat there and broken down that phrase? Like it doesn't exist. There's no such thing. There's individuals who are healthy or unhealthy. There's an individual health journey. There's no blanket public health criteria which fits every single person. Mm-hmm. Like that's just not the case. To me, self-responsibility is an objective fact. Selves exist. That's objective. You have the challenge of life. That means you have to take responsibility for your life. That's objective, right? Self-responsibility is me saying, I choose not to receive anything unearned in my life. I choose to earn the right to exist. I choose to earn the fruits of my labor. I choose to earn the fact that I'm climbing a mountain that other people aren't. Like, why else are we here if not to exercise potential? And self-responsibility is the only pathway for that to happen.
How does one go about like truly taking responsibility for their own lives and taking back their own power?
Well, I think first of all, man, you just have to be radically honest with yourself. Yep. You just have to be honest with yourself. You need to look in the mirror and go, oh, look, there you are right there. Okay, what do you want in life? What do you value? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Self-knowledge for me is the foundation of it all. You have to know yourself. And if you don't know yourself, then what the hell are you doing in life?
How do you go about knowing yourself though? Is that doing shadow work? I'm asking.
I think it's there's so many different elements that can feed self-knowledge. Obviously, shadow work is one element of it, is to become more whole. You want to reclaim lost aspects of yourself. You know, we're all born into this world vulnerable. We're babies. You know, and hopefully we have parents that are able to nourish us and take care of us and provide safety. But for many of us, that wasn't the case. And so, you know, and then as you get older, you know, there are behaviors, there are ways of being that are approved of or disapproved of. And so our personality starts to take shape from our environment, from our parents, from our conditioning. And also, if you want to get into more esoteric stuff like astrology and human design, there are certain inherent aspects to us that are true, in my opinion. But then as you get older, you know, you have to look at yourself and go, okay, well, why am I getting triggered by this? You know, why am I keep attracting these relationships into my life? Why isn't my life the way that one part of me dreams of? And you got to go, what do I need to do about it? You know, do I need to read a book? Do I need to, you know, do body work? Do I need to go see a therapist? You have to own yourself and go, hey, this shit is happening. What do I need to do about it? And so there's many ways to go about it, but like knowing yourself is the key.
What comes up for me there is a question with respect to like manifestation, if that makes sense. Like when you truly come to know who and what you are, because there's a lot of people in the consciousness and I would say New Age community that say that you can manifest anything in your life. And I guess what I want to ask is, do you think that that's true? That the only thing holding us back from achieving something is our own limiting beliefs?
I don't think that's true.
I mean, I mean the reality is like you're going to I want to manifest $100 trillion.
This is what I mean, man.
Probably not, you know, like it's not realistic. Okay. That being said, you know, having a positive belief system combined with actual action, you know, is going to move you closer to that. But again, like we're trying to control life. Like life isn't linear. A lot of times we can set the intention. We can write something down. We can work towards it, but we don't know how it's going to come to us. You know what I mean? But just saying, I'm going to sit there and meditate and dream of a Ferrari, you know, it's going to show up on my doorstep. That's ridiculous.
Everything in life and nature requires work and effort to be maintained and sustained, right? If you leave a house, it's going to collect dust. It needs to be cleaned. It needs to be maintained. And the same thing goes for your psyche. There's work and effort involved to actually do this, right? Mm-hmm. And I think what holds most people back at the end of the day is that there's guilt around the true achievement, you know, that there's guilt around working hard and actually earning and maybe earning more than the person next to you or your neighbor or whatever it might be. There's pride is considered a deadly sin. To me, that's not the case at all. Pride is the emotional reward for achievement. What could be more natural than that? It's pride that keeps me going. It's pride that keeps me wanting to create value for myself, for my family, for the people that I love, to be creative, you know? Obviously, intention is matters a lot. Intention is a big part of the piece, but it's intention combined with focused action and effort in the direction of what you value and what you actually want in life.
Yeah, and most people don't even know what they value. And so you have to get clear on what you value ultimately, first and foremost. Mm-hmm. And not what you think you value, but what you actually value. Because most people will sit there and say that they value, you know, health and fitness, but then they're not doing anything around it.
So
you
true.
Know, like the reality is most people, and I guess I'm at fault sometimes, value their phones in their hands.
Yeah.
They value scrolling through social media. You know, so it's like, what do you really value? So you have to get clear on that. And what can you do to keep moving forward? You know, and this is, man, you have to just be honest. You have to have that level of self-awareness to go, what do I value? What do I want? How do I go about doing it? And can I, do I need support doing it? Do I need to be humble enough? This is when I use that word, to ask for help, to do something different than I've been doing before to improve. You know, can I allow myself to feel pain? I mean, this is such an important foundation to personal development, is just to be able to allow yourself to feel the pain of your reality, of your existence, you know, without distracting it away. Most people live in a constant state of self-medication, whether it's going from their phone to porn, to shopping, to eating foods, to distracting themselves in a myriad of ways. When if they didn't do those things, that stuff would bubble up from the unconscious to be faced and dealt with and integrated. And so we need more stillness in a certain way. We need more embodiment, actually getting to know your body, tuning in to the feelings, to that felt sense, and going, what is real for me? When I feel a trigger coming up, can I sit with and go, oh, that's interesting. Why is this happening? When you see yourself about to do those habitual acts that you do over and over again, whether it's reaching for the cigarette, whether it's, you know, sitting down in front of your computer, picking up your phone, when you feel that, whatever, that existential angst or that thing that's there, can you sit with it? Can you allow it to move through you and be like, oh, wow, that's interesting.
You know, this is something that I say quite a bit with respect to both mental health and physical health, is that the avoidance of feeling temporary pain is what perpetuates chronic illness. I think so many people are chronically ill on the physical side of things, whether that's autoimmune conditions or just general chronic illness, or, you know, chronic mental issues like anxiety, depression, addictions, is because it's the avoidance of feeling temporary pain. I think overwhelmingly Western society, and specifically Western society, is numbing out, and that's leading to chronic conditions.
Yeah, and that's also the status quo of, you know, like you said before, the New Age movement, which is the aversion of pain, but it's also the status quo of contrived dogmatic religious beliefs as well, right? Mm-hmm. It's like I'm a born sinner. I'm not responsible for these inherent feelings, right? It's like so to me, religious thought is disassociation from certain parts of us, and so is New Age thought, but just in different ways. It's like one is the spiritual branch of the right, and one is the spiritual branch of the left. But
I never thought of it like that. That's actually a really good point.
Yeah. And both of them have just did, like we said before in our podcast, they've just disowned in themselves what they hate in each other.
Yeah, that's so true.
But wholeness is the key. It's about integrating all of it. It's about willing to be human. But the thing is, being human is a messy endeavor. And people don't like that, right? But it's the reality. There's shit that needs to be dealt with here on the ground in the objective truth of your life. And this is what we need to do, is accept our reality starkly for what it is, first and foremost, before we can do anything at all to change it. Before we can change it, we have to see it clearly. Otherwise, how the hell are we going to know what to change?
You talk about self-responsibility before. Again, how do you embrace all of you? How do you embrace all the parts of you? You know, so then you're not sitting there projecting it out and pointing the finger out at everyone. You know, and this is where you talk about shadow work before. You have to dance with the darkness within. You have to know the part of you that can lie, cheat, steal, and do other things. So then you can see it in the other. So then you can call it out. Because most people that repress these elements, they just project it on everyone else.
Yes.
You know, and then very often they get taken advantage of it. You know, if you're not in touch with the part of you that can hustle someone, you're more likely to be hustled.
Yeah.
That's so true, man. And I think that's why so many people, this is like almost a rhetorical statement. Of course, that's why so many people have fallen for this agenda, because they're unwilling to look at the darkness within themselves, or, you know, maybe a situation that they were exposed to in their own lives where they were manipulated, where they were lied to, or where they were the one manipulating, they were the one lying. When they haven't dealt with that situation and dissected it, then they're more likely to fall for it in the future. And I think that's why so many people are falling for it.
If you're enjoying this episode so far, please share it with a family member, a loved one, a fellow tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist, or your neighbor who thinks you're absolutely nuts. We are censored and shadow banned on virtually every platform, making it difficult for us to showcase what we're doing. So we rely on you all to help us grow. Also, if you like this podcast, please consider becoming a member of The Way Forward to support us. We put a lot of intention into what we do, and our membership has so much value. And we're so grateful for your continued support so we can keep making these episodes and providing valuable information to you. Lastly, if you have a holistic health or freedom-oriented business you run, or if you know of one, please head to or share our business directory form in the show notes. The directory is currently private, but we plan on launching it publicly soon, fully funded by the Way Forward members. Over half of the businesses in our directory offer exclusive discounts for members to The Way Forward, and we sincerely appreciate your help with onboarding these businesses to our directory so that we can drive our members to those businesses and create more value for you, our supporters. Thanks, and enjoy the rest of the episode.
One question I do have on that, on like doing the shadow work, right, is that some people can almost form an identity around that in and of itself, where they're perpetually doing the shadow work to where they identify with their shadow. You know what I mean? So where's the line between like doing shadow work and just perpetuating that darker element of yourself by constantly focusing on it?
Well, I think it depends on how you ultimately choose to live your life. I mean, it's one thing if you're aware of like, let's say a darker part of you, but then how are you living your life? You know, can you stand in between the tension of opposites, you know, of the part of you that might want to manipulate someone, the other part of you that's like, well, I'm not going to force myself or manipulate this person, and make a choice and go, okay, I can feel that. You got to sweat. You got to sweat in life. Most people, they completely disown certain parts of them, and they just live. They over-identify with certain ways of being. I'm this. I'm X, Y, and Z, and that's it. Yeah. You know, they don't understand what exists on the other side. So, I mean, I approach, man, all this work with a lightness, you know, for over, 15, 20 years, man, of getting into all different things around alternative health, around psychology. Like, it's fun. It's deep. It's messy. It's painful. And it's light. And it's fun. That's just the way, I look at it.
When you're unable to acknowledge the darkness within, like your asthma said, you project it outwards and you create a scapegoat out of evil, whether it's Satan, whether it's aliens, whether it's Bill Gates, whatever it might be. Anyone who's pointing the finger externally to such a degree is avoiding responsibility within. They're avoiding aspects of themselves. And this is the reason why we have had mass slaughters, mass wars throughout all of human history, is the external projection of evil, ultimately. Now, yeah. Recognizing evil within is not just identifying with evil, oh, I'm such a bad person, because what about the question, is evil part of nature? Does darkness simply...
Polarity.
This is the law of polarity, right? Yeah. We have dark and light. We have the sun and the moon. We have the unconsciousness and consciousness, right? As above, so below. As within, so without. It's about integration. It's about wholeness. It's about being able to stand in the middle and recognizing there's all these different aspects and parts of myself. There's all these different aspects and parts of nature and reality, okay? And none of them are inherently wrong. It's just about how do we utilize them? How do we interact with them?
Yeah. I use a great analogy often that I say is that when you think about the psyche, you look at it from like the perspective of being a conductor in an orchestra. Okay. And so you have the executor of the psyche, you can say the ego in that regards. We had all these different parts of you, different instruments. They have different way of sounding, different way of moving, different ways of being in the world. And the more instruments you have access to, I just think you're going to create a greater symphony. And so most people are highly repressed. They operate out of like, you know, 10%, 5%, 3%, you know, of themselves. But life is more full. You can have so much more fullness, man. I love dancing. I love dancing between opposites. I had a teacher once, in a training, this is like in 2010, someone asked him, what do you think enlightenment is? And he said, the ability to navigate opposites.
You said enlightenment?
Someone asked him, what do you think enlightenment is? Because that's a word that gets thrown around
for sure
in so many different ways. And he responded by saying, the ability to navigate and dance between opposites, between polarity within yourself, to have that intimate relationship, to have that conscious relationship with these different parts of you. Ultimately, free will is the ability to stand in between opposites and choose, not just have certain parts of you hijack your psyche and unconsciously run your life. So,
This is also like getting into with respect to any given thing, the both and rather than the either or, right? And like, at what point, this is going to be a deep one, at what point is sitting in the both and not taking a stand for something that is right? You know, does that make sense what I'm saying? Like when you're wrestling with the, oh, well, it's both and.
Well, I'm not saying stand in between the tension of opposites and be inactive
and do nothing.
Yeah. And do nothing. Okay. I'm saying you're there. You can feel these different parts of you playing on you, and then hopefully, you know, through understanding the experience of these different parts of you and having a greater level of self-awareness, you can make a decision that one is aligned with your highest values and that serves yourself ultimately, and through that process serves the collective. I'm not saying just sit there and being like, oh, I'm in a tug of war battle and I'm not doing anything.
Let me give you an example though, because so again, I'm coming from a biased perspective here. I'm someone who thinks that reality is ultimately all one. It's all one being modulating in an infinite number of unique ways. But then I also I'm in this reality that I believe is all one, but I think there is still objectively a difference between me and you guys. Like, we are clearly separate beings within this idea that we are all one. So in my mind, that's the only example that I can think of where I'm holding the both and two seemingly contradictory beliefs.
But so how would that, you saying we're all one, then how does that feed your behavior? That's an idea, that's a concept.
For sure.
How do you act from that?
So this is a great question. From that, I then act more lovingly to other people because I recognize them not as separate from me on a fundamental level that I can't readily access at any given moment, but it's on a fundamental level that I recognize they are not separate from me. And because they are not separate from me, I would never want to impose my will upon them, or at least as much as I possibly can refrain from imposing my will upon them, or, infringing upon the non-aggression principle.
And for me, through understanding how the individual unconscious works, I recognize that if I do wrong unto the other, then ultimately I'm burdening myself. I'm burdening my own unconscious. But I'm coming from a place that we're individuals. But I know as objective truth through the process of reason and experience, that if I harm another person, if I do something wrong to another person, then that doesn't serve me. That doesn't serve my values, because then I'm developing a burden within myself, a guilt within myself, which then I have to go and deal with, which is something that I don't want.
I also want to bring up something we mentioned before. Again, based on those two, let's say, polarity beliefs, let's say you're with your family and someone breaks into your home. You know, the part of you that's like, oh, we're all one. I need to love and honor this person that's trying to cause harm to me and my family.
We frame that, though, because, again, coming from this perspective is that there are people who are conditioned, and this is coming from my frame of mind, right? There are people who are conditioned to believe that we are not all one. So they believe they are separate from other people. So they then, lie, manipulate, cheat, steal, do whatever they can, infringe upon someone, kill people, use people, exploit people, because they have the false belief that we are separate.
That's not someone who believes they're separate. That's someone who hates themselves. That's someone who's living in a state of self-loathing.
I could see that perspective too. I'm saying from the perspective that I'm coming from, that's how I reframe that in my mind. This person is still conditioned to believe in separation. So I, as someone who recognizes, that we are all one, would step in and not allow this individuated portion of the whole to infringe upon, another out of conditioning. That's the way that I would reframe that situation.
Okay. Bro, to me, separation is a fact. I'm not connected to you, Erasmus. I'm not connected to you right now.
Like, that's true. Yeah.
I've got eyes and ears and a mind that I need to trust because I exist and it exists. So, you know, I need to go with what I see ultimately.
No, I agree with that though. And that's what I'm saying, going back to like the both and, is that like I hold both of those perspectives. It's that one is more a subtle underlying, you know, fundamental aspect of reality that I can't always access unless I, you know, am able to access higher states of consciousness through meditation and things like this. But in my day-to-day life, I see separation. It's very clear that separation is self-evident in everyday life.
But this is the whole thing about wholeness, is that when you have access to these different parts of you, they can serve you in different situations and different circumstances. Yeah. So by you being able to, let's say, go for a walk in the forest or meditate and connect to that part of you that connects to everything, that's great. But if you're like doing an interview with someone, or you're at the gym, like being in that blissed out, like losing, like connection to like your boundaries and dissolving into the oneness of it all, like it's probably not going to help you squat 300 pounds. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's in that sense. So it's like, again, like we push our own buttons when we've done shadow work, when we've healed our wounds, when we've integrated these lost aspects of ourselves, we then have more potential. We then in different situations have different aspects of ourselves to touch upon, to support us depending on what is needed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like even just like take the quality of anger or aggression, for example, right? For the person who's repressed anger and aggression because they think it's evil and wrong and they need to be blissed out and that has no part in society, ultimately that's going to come out in very toxic and unconscious ways. It's going to hijack that individual because what they've repressed has no choice but ultimately to bubble up in certain circumstances. But anger and aggression, it isn't one-sided. It's multifaceted. The quality of anger and aggression also is the quality of drive, is the quality of achievement. It's what allows me to go and build a business. It's what allows me to be motivated, right? So all these things archetypally have many values other than just the black and white thing that we tend to condition upon them. So by having conscious access to the fact that I know there's anger within me, there's parts of me that are very angry, I can then consciously call upon those parts of myself to get certain tasks done, to achieve things in my day-to-day life. Whereas if it's repressed, I'm far more likely to be passive in my pursuits.
So true,
man. To be passive in the face of the challenges that are required for my existence.
Most people that repress their anger, they're unable to say no.
Yeah.
They're unable to set boundaries. They're unable to set boundaries.
Yeah.
Okay. So again, when we look at these different aspects of us, certain archetypal energies, a homeopathic dose of them can support us in certain life situations. It doesn't mean we need to come out guns blazing and like, you know, just
you can express anger without infringing or imposing upon someone unjustifiably.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Just a simple no, you will not speak to me this way. No, I will not wear a mask. No, I'm not going to follow these mandates. You know, you don't have to like come in going postal on everyone.
Yeah.
You know, just simple, solid, standing on 2 feet, not on 1 foot, flopping around.
Yeah. Yeah, for me, I find that like my workouts are a lot better when I'm expressing, you know, that pent up anger when I'm working out. Like I have such a better workout. I move more weight when I'm expressing that anger.
And that's one way for people to tap into that, man. Like when they exercise, when they go and hit a boxing bag, you know, it's important. It's life force energy.
Yeah.
Ultimately, we need to feel, right?
Yeah.
Feeling is ultimately vital for wholeness. But again, these modalities, left or right, dogmatic religion or New Age thought, is about the repression of certain feelings. But we have to provide ourselves opportunities to feel fully, to feel completely. Ultimately, that's what it means to be a human being, right? We all have bodies.
Yeah, for many people, one of the first steps in healing certain traumas and getting out of a certain state is the ability to actually feel and experience healthy aggression. You know, especially if they were violated, if they were coerced in a certain way, or they weren't allowed to do certain things, you know, from a childhood standpoint, the ability to tune into that and to tap into that in a very safe manner. Okay. And for some people, the healing process needs to be much more subtle. For other people, it can be more intense. And this is where it comes down to the individual to know themselves and go, what do I need? You know, knowledge is really important. Having a foundation of knowledge and understanding there's knowledge out there can support a person in a myriad of ways, man. Just knowing, even just the last 3 years, man, you know, it even goes beyond just the psyche standpoint. It's like being aware of certain things around alternative health, being aware around certain things in the incestuous relationship between the pharmaceutical industry and government and media, et cetera. Just having that knowledge aside from anything else can support you to make a different decision. So there's the inner work, there's inner knowledge, and then there's also knowledge of the external. And how do those interplay and support you in making decisions, hopefully, that are going to bring you closer towards bettering your life in the most ideal manner?
Ultimately, the purpose of consuming knowledge is to apply it externally.
Yeah. The another thing that I've been wrestling with, and this is specific to German New Medicine, I just like found it to be interesting, is that, yeah, I know, because that's like your wheelhouse.
Well, it's not my wheelhouse, but it's just like something that I've
definitely... You're very knowledgeable on it, though.
Been into it.
Yeah. How much regarding our health issues is really dealing with the mental, emotional, psycho-spiritual aspect of reality, and how much of it is actually coming from external forces? Like, what I mean more specifically is that, like, I think some proponents of German New Medicine hold nutrition to almost be irrelevant, although they don't say that, because they do say that there are certain conflicts that arise from malnutrition or poisoning, but it's like they hold nutrition to almost be irrelevant and poisoning to almost be irrelevant. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's both, man. Yeah. You know, obviously, like, put yourself in the healthiest environment you can, eat healthy foods, etc. But there's so many instances out there where someone eats healthy, they go to the gym all the time, and then they have a heart attack or they get diagnosed with cancer or whatever the case may be. So there's many factors to it. And yes, eating healthy foods are going to support you in a healing process as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, do I think it has no impact on you? No, I don't. But that being said, there could be someone out there who's biohacking all single, like all day, all the new things. I read this online, and yet like they don't have a regulated nervous system. Yeah. You know, they don't know themselves. They haven't done shadow work, and they're going to experience the effects of that. So, you know, I think a healthy psyche, because our bodies always adapt. Think how many thoughts you have in a day, you know, and your body's adapting to that. So if you have an inner critic that just destroys you every day, there's deep insecurity that thinks you're dumb and stupid and fat and lazy. What is that going to do to you? How is that going to impact you? How is your body adapting to those thoughts? Because back to what Joel said, we and the organism wants to survive. And from a GNM standpoint, so many of these things, these programs that come into being, come from this place of the organism doing its best to adapt to survive. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. But then again, you talk about like poisoning. I think the amount of poisoning matters.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about EMFs. I think the amount matters, but also there are so many cases of people who aren't being impacted by EMFs. So there's still so much that's unknown. Maybe someone already has a significant biological special program running, and being around EMFs exacerbates the conflict or exacerbates.
That's what I kind of think too, is it's like some people are more susceptible to these biological programs and like the conflicts themselves because they are already in a malnourished or overly poisoned state, or like a unique combination of both those things. I think it's like that's how you bring in the nutrition side and the poisoning, like the toxicology side, into GNM.
Yeah, man, I think so. I think there's room for integration, but from my opinion, and again, in the amount of years that I've been in this world, to Dr. Hammer's five biological laws, man, just make the most sense and are so holistic and so scientific and understanding like the functioning of our biology that integrates psyche, the brain as sort of this like controlling computer mechanism. And then again, our body's adaptation. So I think it makes a lot of sense. Do I think like it's the end all be all for everything? No. That being said, there's so much knowledge there that can bring a person more towards self-responsibility. And I think one of the reasons why people are quick to dismiss GNM is because it's a system and an understanding that forces you to be radically self-responsible, because so many people want a quick fix. Well, if I just do an ice bath, if I just do this breath work, if I just take these supplements, you know, if I just do this. And it's like, well,
and those can be useful things. Like for me, breath work is huge, right? No, like I do.
It can be, but I'm just saying, like
totally agree.
What's the state? What's your inner state like?
What GNM is saying is like, don't leave consciousness at the door, right? Yeah. Where's the study of the person who hates themselves, who's eating the healthiest foods on the planet? Where's the study on the person who's doing breath work and ice baths every day, but hates doing breath work and ice baths, but is just doing the thing going to make them healthy? And how much impact does their psyche and their consciousness doing the thing, whatever it is, whether it's eating nutritious foods or, you know, doing one of these modalities, what impact does that play?
Yeah. And the five biological laws just bring a specificity to something that people have talked about for years, mind, body. Oh, stress is the major cause of disease. Okay, cool. But can we get more specific? And when you start getting really specific and looking into, okay, why did I have a UTI? Why did I, you know, get the common cold symptoms? You know, it's really, really fascinating. And I love seeing the aha moments that come from people that have just been introduced to this knowledge and go, oh, shit, that's trippy.
Yeah. You know?
So again, it's knowledge.
It's nuts. It's always spot on. Like every time I've taken a symptom that I'll give you an example. I have this rash right here that's been coming up on my right forehead. You can barely see it. It's worse on some days. But I texted Melissa because like I'm taking the GHK Pilhar Academy like course to become, you know, trained in Germany medicine. And like a few months ago, I texted Melissa and I said, tell me if you think my assessment is correct. I'm left-handed. So because I'm left-handed, my mother's side is my right side. Eczema, rashes, psoriasis, and things like this are related to a separation conflict of either being like wanting to be away from someone or feeling separate from someone. And I haven't spoken with my mom, haven't had a good relationship with my mom in like, you know, 18 months now. And there's situations that keep happening where like we, you know, those symptoms, those mental feelings I'm having keep being re-triggered. Right. And I asked Melissa, I was like, do you think that's related to my mom? And she said, absolutely. Like your assessment is spot on. And if you have a track playing in your life, that's why those symptoms keep coming, going, coming, going, coming, going. And I have had a track playing in my life where I keep being re-triggered by experiences related to my mom. So that's like a super specific one. A rash only on the right side of my head that's been there now for like over half a year that keeps coming, going, coming, going, coming, going. And it always coincides with me having feelings of unworthiness with respect to my relationship with my mom.
Yeah, it's fascinating, man. I've given this example before. I'm going to share it now. It's like a couple of years ago, I got a random message from someone from my past on Instagram. You know, I didn't follow him, so it showed up in like the request. Mm-hmm. And I clicked on it and it was someone just like ripping me apart for my beliefs around everything that was happening in 2020, 2021, et cetera. And, you know, obviously it took me off guard. It was definitely a DHS. It's someone who like was friendly with and close with, but haven't been in touch with for a long time. And my wife and I were away at that time and we went to breakfast and I couldn't eat. You know, I was like, I was kind of like trying to resolve it. I was working it in my mind. I was like, oh my God, how do I
indigestible morsel?
What'd you say? Well, no, for me, I thought it was more of a, well, I'll come to it based on the symptom that happened afterwards. So I'm in conflict activity. I'm like, well, what do I do? How do I respond to this person? It's been 7 years. I want to respond diplomatically in a way because I don't get into that attack and just let me just respond. So I get back. I take some time, get back to the room. I write this long email and present all these posts. I thanked him for reaching out. It was just like really diplomatic. I press send. And then I literally right after I had this big zit that came up on my forehead, you know, which was attacked or maybe even intellectual attack, being feeling attacked for my beliefs. And so it was so fascinating because I'm not someone that really deals with like, you know, blemishes to a certain degree. So that just popped up in that regards. And I just thought that was really interesting. Another thing, bringing it to the animal kingdom. Just recently, Sophie left the country for 9 days. It was the first time she and I or our dog hasn't been with us together, like, or just with one of us. So the pack was separated, meaning she was with one of us. So when Sophie came back, our dog literally for 3 days just had chronic diarrhea and blood in her stools and was just like pooing blood everywhere. And knowing what I know about GNM, I didn't freak out and go, oh my God, I'm going to take her to the vet and we're going to give her the antibiotics. And I was like, this makes sense. We have never been split up for a long time to this amount of time. And I was dealing with so much stressful stuff, like at our house, we had a massive sinkhole because of the rains. And like, I was stressed up. There's all this stuff going on. I'm sure she was maybe picking up on resonantly as well. But 3 days, symptoms disappeared, back to normal, you know, again. So the power of understanding that our symptoms aren't to be feared, that nothing is wrong with us, that nature is doing what it's doing, can be so freeing. Just that simple fact alone. You don't even need to get like knee deep in the specificities of the five biological laws or all this other stuff. But just people knowing that symptoms, for the most part, means their body is healing. Mm-hmm. And what does that consciousness? How does that shift your belief of, oh, my body's doing what it's doing? How amazing is, as opposed to, oh, I'm sick, something's wrong, what's happening? The frequency of those two things are night and day.
So true. I've even shifted my perspective over the last 2 years, and even like the way I approach health is, and this is a question I'm actually going to ask during the end of COVID. We have a segment for it called What is Disease that I'm going to ask, like, what is disease? And then what is health? And I think it's like Dr. Pilevsky, Dr. Cowan, Dr. Kaufman, and a few others on that session. But I used to say like, I'm never sick, as like a point of pride. And it's like, is that a point of pride necessarily though? Because sickness itself, as long as it's not chronic, and you know, in most cases, is a healing response of the body. Like the occasionally feeling symptoms of illness means your body's doing exactly what it's supposed to do. It's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. And it just puts less pressure on us. Cause especially if you're like identified with the health self, like I'm into health, I do things the right way. And then if you don't have this knowledge and you get quote unquote sick, then your inner critic comes in and goes, oh, what's wrong?
What the fuck am I doing? I need to biohack more.
Yeah, man. So it's just like, again, more freedom, more peace, more understanding, which in the long run will guide you more to closer to health.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk about new age stuff now, because this is something that like, how would you define new age? It's hard for me to like put my finger on what new age actually is.
To me, when it comes to defining new age, I think the word disassociation and detachment kind of comes to mind. I think it's anything which proposes the idea that we are above or beyond the human existence and human emotions and the messiness of being humanness. I think it's anything that proposes the ideal that peace, light, and love is the highest ideal, and experiencing suffering, experiencing painful emotions, experiencing inner conflicts is a lesser state.
What would you say then is the highest ideal?
Being a fully feeling, embodied, imperfect human being. I think the highest ideal is the fact that we are human beings who have feelings, who have emotions, who have relationships, who are very complex and who experience a vast array of feelings, thoughts, and emotions every single day. And I think it's having the capacity to be there with all of it fully without shying away from that.
Dude, I think that's such a perfect way to contextualize what new age is actually, because and that might be the first time I've heard someone verbally explain what they think new age is, because I hold love and peace to be a pretty high ideal. Like I think that's up there amongst the highest ideals, but I've noticed sometimes in myself where I will refrain from saying how I authentically feel about something, because I'm like, I don't want to come across
negative. I don't want to be negative.
I don't want to be negative. Yeah. I don't want to be negative. Exactly. Exactly. I think, I mean, fuck man, that keeps people from speaking certain true things. Like I won't name names just for the sake, cause I personally just don't want to, but there's this dude that I do not fucking trust whatsoever that I think is manipulating.
You've named him many times, I think.
Yeah, I have, yeah. but I think he's manipulating people like crazy. And I think anyone with a brain can tell that he is. And I've refrained from speaking on it because I'm like, I don't want to come across as negative. I don't want to be divisive. I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. And even to some degree, worrying about, you know, what mutual friends will think of me for speaking up on my authentic experience around that. And then at the same time, like the flip side of me is like, man, am I giving this individual too much power by speaking to this? So it's like, I don't know what the balance is there, but to your
it's point. It's about authentically and appropriately responding to reality. Like that's what we're here to do. You know, yeah. I think in any case where we feel like repression is coming into the picture, that's the wrong path, in my opinion.
Yeah. And peace and love are high ideals, but not to the degree where you're going to repress the opposite and just live in a one season world. You know what I mean? So, and discernment comes into play too, man. Like, I don't think a person needs to speak out on every single thing, you know, and also what part of you wants to speak out? What is the motivation? What is the energy? What is the tone behind the speaking out that you want to do? You know, sometimes you just need to give yourself some time. Or, you know, instinctually, I mean, from what I know about you from a human design standpoint, you know, what's that intuitive hit of like, what is healthy, what is unhealthy, you know, and going with that and understanding that, tuning into that. You know, a lot of times, again, for relating to this element of yours from a human design standpoint, people like then get lost. They get lost into weighing things out when they had that knowing that
they had that initial hit and they didn't do it. Yeah.
You know? So, and a lot of people don't speak out because, again, they're also, you know, they have that part of them. It's like, what will people think?
And that's a program. Ultimately, that's a program that's running and has hijacked that individual psyche and is preventing them from reality and is preventing them from, you know, moving closer towards wholeness. You know, this is the difference. New age ideals, they consider perfection to be the goal. What we're saying is, no, wholeness is the goal. Right.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that so much. Yeah. And I feel like I wouldn't even say it's subtle. Another very apparent element of New Ageism is this like escapist mentality, like escaping trying to be human or trying to evolve beyond being human. And it's not like of course we want to reach a higher level of human potential, but it's like a weird unnamed trying to evolve past being human, trying to like disassociate from being a human being.
And to escape from having a body, to transcend the body. I'm not a body. Like, I get it. I understand on some deep spiritual principle, there is that element of you that will always exist, etc. But you are a body. We are in this
You're
world.
In a body right now. You're supposed to experience this.
You're experiencing it, clearly. You know?
If we're here experiencing it, we are supposed to experience it.
Yeah, and so much of let's say new age spirituality is like not honoring what's going on in your body.
The thing is, in the beginning, coming into new age will feel amazing because it gives you a pathway to escape from the entire dilemma that has built up and pent up within your psycho-emotional body and system up until that point. Because then it says, no, all you need to do is witness your thoughts. All you need to do is witness your feelings, okay? And sure, being the witness and coming to that observer state is very useful for a period of time. But we're not meant to stay there. We're not meant to live there. We're not meant to live as detached from our thoughts and feelings. No, it can be a way to get perspective. But ultimately, we have to deal with our thoughts and with our feelings and experience them fully in our bodies and in the world. And ultimately, that's what leads to human potential thriving and flourishing, not the escape from it. I went through a decent new age phase. It might have been 4 or 5 years, and it felt amazing in the beginning. I was completely blissed out. I found so much peace in doing the most mundane tasks, like emptying the dishwasher or taking the rubbish out, just being in the here and now. But ultimately, what it led to was many bonfires lighting around me from things that I was avoiding in my life, right? In the reality around me. And it got to the point where I realized that I need to do something. I need to act in this world. I need to be in this world. I need to deal with the state of my relationships. I need to deal with the state of my finances. I need to deal with the reality of having a family and all the responsibility that comes with that. And that's where shadow work comes into play. So to me, new age, again, is the repression of the shadow. And it's only through really confronting the shadow, confronting all the inauthenticity that has fostered and festered within us, that we can actually come to integrity within ourselves. And when you're in integrity with yourself, you know, then the game changes altogether. Then you can speak your mind clearly. You can actually speak truth, and you can actually receive truth as well, because you're coming from a place of homeostasis where you're saying, I now refuse to fake reality for anyone. I now refuse to lie to myself and refuse to accept illusions from the world. I'm now exalting my own mind as the final arbiter of truth.
Mm. Well said. Very well said. I want to talk now. I have a couple questions with respect to what you all do with your coaching program, because I actually don't know, and I feel bad about that I don't know what exactly you do with your coaching program. But could you just share what exactly you do and what your coaching program's called?
Oh, we're a cult. It's a very secret society. We can't really share that.
Yeah, we need at least 10 milliliters of your blood in order to join.
The coaching program is called Rise Above the Herd. And basically, this is the culmination of the, I guess, the philosophies and the strategies and the deprogramming that we've considered to be most beneficial in our life and most necessary for someone who is truly interested in moving closer towards their full potential and garnering greater freedom and self-responsibility in their lives. And, you know, it's ultimately specifically for truth seekers. They're the only people who are listening to our podcast anyway. But basically, we go through a period of deprogramming and debunking from the ideas and philosophies which we feel lead individuals further away from wholeness and further away from potential. And then we try to, inhibit and plant seeds of really good ideas and show to them what's possible when you develop authentic self-esteem, when you come into a place of congruence with yourself, when you allow imperfect action to move you forward in your life, when you realize that, you know, ultimately we all are capable of being heroes in our own unique ways. So we've now run this 5 times. You know, we've got an incredible testimonials and reviews every time we run it. And, you know, we want to show people that there's no need to, you know, like obviously there's a system there that needs to be fought on some level. But the way we fight the system more than anything else is uplifting ourselves, is exalting ourselves, is having deep meaning, purpose, and actually actualizing that in our lives, moving towards it in a real way, not just constantly pointing the finger from a state of contradiction. I don't know if you can add anything to that.
No, man. I mean, I totally agree with everything you said. And even like where community comes into this is like, think of a community that has individuals that are honoring themselves, loving themselves, and moving towards what they were meant to do versus a community that's just a bunch of people sacrificing each other for each other. You know, so just think of that visual, look at that. And so our goal is, yes, we understand that we're social beings, but we want communities to be filled with individuals that have the value of self-knowledge, like near the top, you know, self-knowledge, self-love, you know, people that have high self-esteem that can deal with the basic challenges of life. And yeah, man, it's just a process of, again, like Joel said, living more heroically in your life. And what does that mean?
Who are the type of people that are coming to you for your coaching program? Like if you could just give like...
It's so diverse. I mean, we've had
what are some common things that people are dealing with prior to coming to your coaching program that then afterwards they, you know, are able to resolve or get clarification on how to take their own power back with respect to that thing?
Common things. Well, ultimately, like it's, you know, fear of acting authentically in the world, you know, fear of speaking their truth, fear of actualizing their potential, you know, fear of creating an online business and putting themselves out there with their beliefs, with their values to the world, you know, and ultimately for many of them, it begins within their families. They're scared of their families on some level. And through that, they're scared of showing up in the world. I think that's what it is. Ultimately, it's a fear of showing up authentically in the world.
I mean, we have someone in the comments who went through our program, Ishan, and, you know, he's one of the youngest people that have gone through our program, and he said was one of the best things from Rise Above the Herd was changing limiting beliefs, especially for making money. And so I think that's a big piece. We have a whole module that's dedicated to kind of deprogramming from a lot of the ideas around money and what it means. And so, you know, we make the argument that money is not the root of all evil. You know, it's really, really empowering. So
that's one thing that frustrates me about the consciousness, health, and freedom and truther space is that there are so many people with a lack mentality surrounding money, and they project that onto others who charge for things. Like when I first announced the membership for The Way Forward, I literally had people say, "I can't believe you're charging $17 a month." And I'm like, dude, all that you get for $17 a month and the amount of intention I put into this, I'm doing this full time. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And then those same people will give loads of money to corporations that they are then speaking out about. And it's just nuts to me.
Yeah. It usually comes from a place of low self-worth and a low self-concept of oneself. And like, you know, you need to be able to honor yourself and provide value and get an exchange for that, because we're trying to create our life and be sovereign. And I think we need to be able to do that, man. Money isn't a bad thing. So, you know, it's been awesome, man. The people that have come through, a lot of them, like maybe first started to wake up in the beginning of 2020, obviously before then as well. I think, again, it's people that want to take more ownership over their lives and have more confidence, build self-esteem, live more heroically. And in a lot of ways, man, what people have been dealing with is, I think some people who haven't been able to set boundaries because they're living under these notions of altruism, where they've been sacrificing themselves to their parents or to their friends and not speaking their truth. You know, they build up the courage to kind of put their feet down and just speak truthfully, you know?
Bro, most people are just operating under the idea that anything I do for someone else makes me good. Anything I do for myself makes me evil. And what this does, it means that we have 99.5% of people walking around as internal contradictions. Because that's a philosophy that simply, you know, cannot lead to any good for a human being or for the collective on any level. And that's what altruism is, man. We uphold altruism as if it's this high ideal. But like, altruism is the morality of communism at the end of the day, which has led to more death and destruction than like fucking anything. Millions have been slaughtered under the guise of the greater good, under the guise of love thy neighbor, under the guise of for the group.
You know what's interesting about that too is so many people, like, it creates a situation where everyone is walking around doing that, feeling some sense of shame for doing things for themselves. And then who benefits from that, and you would think that it's probably intentionally set up this way to some degree, is the people who are acutely aware of the situation that it's creating, because then they prey on your inability to thrive for yourself and to actually, you know, attain goals for yourself.
Yeah. Why do people think we're so heavily programmed with these ideas from the get-go, right? Mm-hmm. Obviously, they want to create human slaves. Obviously, they want everyone trying to give from an empty cup, which only leads to human beings hating existence, hating themselves. It leads to a buildup of resentment, guilt, and obligation, like I said before. And of course, no one likes being human when that's the status quo. But if you can move beyond that, if you can rise above the herd, if you can climb out of the crab bucket, if you can truly fill your own fill your own cup, and if you have that intention, you can give from the overflow. And it's only the people who are giving from the overflow that are doing more good than anyone else, right? Love thyself first. You have to. Why would I trust someone to love me who can't love themselves? Mm-hmm. Like, deal with yourself first. Deal with where you are. Why would I trust someone to make decisions for a group or for a collective that can't even keep their own home in order?
You know, it's interesting you are bringing this up, because I said this on our men's call the other day for The Way Forward, and luckily Pete is in the chat so he can back me up. I said, I am convinced now, I'm thoroughly convinced that the root of basically all problems in the world is a lack of self-love on the individual level. That's the root of all problems.
Yeah, and that's why the solution is individual solution, not a political solution, not a collective solution. No. So if each person looked in the mirror and goes, "What do I need to do? What do I need to do to improve myself, to love myself more?" That's what's going to change the world. Not voting for another president.
What if they love that president though?
If they can, they're free, right?
Yeah, I'm kidding.
But. It's crazy, because like self-love, you hear it all over the place, you know, it's corny. Like, it goes beyond like, oh, I went and got my nails done and I took a bath today. Sure, those are nice, but self love, because really much deeper thing.
Dude. It's internal. It's not an external thing. It's a loving the internal parts of yourself. It's loving your shadow. It's being able to look back at mistakes you made and look at them and say, yeah, I fucked up big time, but I love that that happened to me, or I love that I was involved in that situation because it taught me X, Y, and Z things. Yeah. It's an aspect of who I am now, and I can, you know, become who I want to be based on that understanding.
Because my reason and consciousness has been expanded as a result of those mistakes which I've made in my life. And yeah, that's absolutely invaluable, right? We're so scared of making mistakes, but how else do we learn? Mm-hmm. But your consciousness has to be attuned to wanting to learn, to wanting to evolve, to wanting to take all the information, all the material, and become better and become more efficient as a result. Like, ultimately, that's the ideal. And like, our ethos is become who you were born to be. Like, at the end of the day, you and every single person listening is, before anything else, is a unique individual which has never existed before. Like, your dreams, your aspirations, your goals, your desires, that's not random. None of it is random. Okay, you're here for a unique purpose. I truly believe we all have unique purpose, unique gifts. So how can I take this human experience to cultivate those gifts and pave a path for myself where I can give that gift by giving to myself through that process as well?
Everything that has been created has a purpose. Look around you in your room. Every single thing that you look at has a purpose. Everything. Human beings are a creation. Now we can get into why, how, and all that, but we're a creation. So to think that each human being, each creation, doesn't have a purpose is ridiculous. And so part of, I think, a mission in an individual's life is to find out what that is. Mm. Find out what your purpose is and move closer towards that and give it.
We're already an hour, almost an hour and a half in. So I've one more question. So what does it mean to be here for the truth?
It's the refusal to fake reality for anyone. It's the refusal to allow internal or external lies to fester. It's a willingness. You know, it's a willingness to be here for the truth. But to me, you know, we haven't got into what is truth. We didn't get there. But the easier question is, what is not truth? I think many people can answer that far easier than they can answer what is truth. So if I can set myself up with the mindset of refusing to compromise reality for anyone, then I put myself in the best position possible to move closer to truth. So I think it's that.
Yeah, man. I mean, it's a process. That's what being here for the truth means. It's not, I have the truth, I know the truth. It's being here for it. Having the desire and the confidence to go after it, to seek it, and also to be humble in a sense, to be like, hey, maybe I don't know everything. And can I be open to taking in information that challenges established belief systems? Mm-hmm. And to, again, coming back to a place of self-responsibility and going, why do I believe what I believe? Yeah. Where does that belief come from? Okay. And to be able to hold space for something that may trigger that, to trigger the belief that you already have. And it's something that I'm really grateful. I don't know, for whatever reason, you know, if I was born this way or my human design, I've always been curious and open, man, like to get knowledge. And I'll never forget the day in 2005, an old acting teacher of mine gave me Dr. Carey Mullis's autobiography, Dancing Naked in the Minefield. And I read that and was just like, whoa, what the fuck else don't I know? This is trippy. You know what I mean? And so that like planted a seed of just being open and curious to go, okay, well, how can I continue this process of digging, of investigating, of uncovering, of getting to the bottom of things to the degree that I do, you know? I mean, and so, yeah, man, I think being here for the truth is just, on some level, loving being human and loving life.
Yeah.
And also loving the not knowing, maybe.
But also it's refusing to just take things on as fake value.
Yeah.
On face value.
Fake value is kind of a good one that you accidentally said.
It's like making sure things actually fit within your concept of reason, making sure things actually make sense, you know, to me, we talk about open-minded a lot, but I don't think it's open-mindedness that we need. We need active minds. We need minds that are willing to think things through properly and ensuring that they fit within one's logic without contradiction.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like to add to the things that both of you said, I would imagine here for the truth is also just the continual process of dissolving the things that are not true, dissolving the conditioning that has been imposed upon us, dissolving the indoctrination, dissolving even our limiting beliefs and the things we've, you know, the situations that have been impressed upon us that we hold a negative connotation to. That's what it means to be here for the truth.
Yeah. But even I want to bring this in just on an internal level. What does it mean to be here for the truth for yourself?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really comes down to self-knowledge and figuring out why you are the way you are, why you do the things you do. What is your purpose? And for people that go, I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know what I want to do. Well, what don't you want to do? Let's start there again. What don't you want to do? What will you not tolerate? What will you not compromise? And start taking the steps, and perhaps your path, your purpose will become clearer over time.
Yeah. What, as a final last question, what are your favorite three podcast episodes? And I'll ask each of you, because it's probably not going to be the same, that you've done for Here for the Truth, so that we can link them in the show notes.
You go first, man. I mean,
not bad.
I mean, I'll go. Our first episode with someone who's been a mentor to me, to us, and who has had probably the biggest impact in my life when I think of mentors is the great Michael Tazarian. And so we interviewed him, our first episode with him, which is literally called Unslaved, which is the name of the podcast. We touch a lot of different things in that. I think it's a great one. We'll ping pong back and forth.
Yeah, definitely the Michael Tazarian episodes. I think the David Whitehead episodes are absolutely fire as well. With David Whitehead, we covered the occult history of royal families, which is a very, very fascinating episode. You know, our interview with Paul Cech, so many people come back to us and tell us that we heard Paul Cech open up on that interview and tell stories about his personal life and personal history that we've never heard before. We've heard all the Paul Cech episodes. So that was an incredible one. And if I want to add one more to the list, probably G. Edward Griffin was a great episode as well.
That one was so badass, dude. Yeah. That one was my favorite one of you guys.
Do we get three each or just three total? Like, how does this work?
I'd say you don't get to talk. I'm kidding. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
No, those are great, man. I mean, there's just so many. You had 118, obviously. Like, there's so many out there. I mean, the episode that people seem to love too, and I know he's popular on Instagram, Xavier Dagba episode.
I love that too.
We talked about shadow work. You know, we got deep in that episode, yeah. So I think that's an amazing one. And then for a lot of people, they got introduced to G&M through our podcast. You know, I can't tell you how many people first heard about G&M in our interviews with Melissa. We've done three. We're about to do a fourth one, and have gone on to study. So.
Yeah, and to leave people with something, episode 119 is coming out on Sunday. It's called Transgenderism and Fifth Generation Warfare. And to me, that was one of my favorite episodes and one of the most important conversations that we've had.
Who was that with?
Simon Esler.
Simon Esler.
He curated a documentary that just came out on April 15th called Cut, Daughters of the West. And it's really amazing. I highly recommend people.
It's about people who go through like gender reassignment surgery.
Yeah, but he goes back into history, what led up to it.
Cosmetic surgery, how things are slowly conditioned over time, et cetera, et cetera.
Cosmetic surgery, yeah. Social media, et cetera, et cetera. But it's really well done, and looking forward to releasing that this Sunday.
Yeah.
Wow.
And, I mean, there's one that's pretty popular and highly interesting but very triggering, but for those who are so inclined, episode 49 is called The Real History of Jesus and Biblical Stories with independent historian Ralph Ellis, who actually he has some very, very important points to make about the fact that maybe Jesus did exist, but just the timeline was shifted and under very different circumstances. But, you know, that's a very, very interesting episode if someone's so inclined.
It was 3-hour epic.
It's 3 hours, yeah.
3 hours, my God. Fellas, much love for both of you. So glad to be the one to interview you when you're both in person. That's awesome. Who's taller, by the way?
I am by like maybe a half inch taller.
It's the hair.
You know?
It's the hair.
But yeah. Man, it was so great for us to hang out. And even when you were scheduling this interview a few months back, I knew I was gonna be visiting him here in Mexico. So we planned this intentionally to actually do an in-person interview with you so we can, you know, be here in the flesh. It's pretty wild, man. It's pretty wild to meet someone that you've been homies with and building something together with online. So many people are blown away that we had never met before.
Yeah.
So it's cool.
And there's a video coming of the surprise. I actually surprised him when we first met.
Did he smell like you thought he would?
Oh, yeah. Even better.
Even better, yeah. Yeah.
All right, dudes. Much love to you. Man, thank you for joining me.
Bro. So much love for what you do. We appreciate you, bro. Yeah. We can't wait to have you back on.
Yeah, and please check out hereforthetruth.com, and I'll link the their favorite episodes in the
show notes.
People
should check out our Keeping It Real episode.
Oh, right? yeah, dude.
Yeah, that one was a really good one. That was a fun episode.
I didn't even think about that because we're here talking. Yeah, but it's a really awesome episode, man. Again, we got really great feedback.
Yeah, that was a good one. Love you, boys.
Love you too, brother. All the best. We'll talk soon.
Peace.